This is Sex Science Sunday, brought to you by the Center for Sexual Expression and Education and Erotic University. Things have to be pretty bad if you have to have penis reduction surgery. And a Florida 17-year-old recently had exactly that, the very first penis reduction surgery ever attempted. And it was necessary. His penis was ridiculously too large. He was not able to play sports. He couldn't really wear clothing of any kind. His unusual condition was described in the Journal of Sexual Medicine. They did not have to make his penis shorter, even though it was a pretty substantial 7 inches long. The problem was, it had a circumference of 10 inches. It's about the size of a mayonnaise jar. Fortunately, this condition is pretty rare. It was caused by sickle cell anemia. Another problem with this extraordinarily large penis was that his irregular blood cells blocked penile blood vessels, and he would get priapism, which he had suffered through several times. The surgery was successful. He is happy with the size of his penis, which is still, as they describe it, generous, but a little bit more functional. Here's some bad news for women. Turns out that the hot flashes that are typically a part of menopause are not necessarily short-term. According to the study, they can last as long as 14 years. The study was published just last week in JAMA Internal Medicine, and they followed a racially, ethnically, and geographically diverse group of 1,449 women with frequent hot flashes or night sweats. The medium duration of symptoms that they found was 7.4 years. But some of them went as long as 14 years. They found that African American and Hispanic women experienced hot flashes significantly longer than white or Asian women. This next part makes sense if you think about it, but the earlier that hot flashes start, the longer they last. The women who got hot flashes before they stopped menstruating, they were likely to have hot flashes for years after menopause. Now, this is not definitively causal, but they found that women with longer-lasting symptoms also tended to have less education, greater perceived stress, and more depression and anxiety. I'm assuming that stress, depression, and anxiety was before the hot flashes, because certainly that would be explainable afterwards. Just in time for Valentine's Day, Sprout Pharmaceuticals is up for the third time at bat. They've resubmitted their female equivalent of Viagra drug called flibanserin for the third time. According to a 1999 study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, more than 40% of U.S. women suffer from some type of sexual dissatisfaction. Now, certainly, probably a lot of that can be cured with better partners. But what they're trying to do with this new drug is help women who are having difficulties with sex. But it's not as simple as Viagra, which is kind of a mechanical approach. It helps the penis get erect. For women, these issues are much more complicated, but still equally devastating to their life satisfaction. Now, the problem that they've had twice already is that the FDA has said that they are concerned over the side effects. Too much dizziness and drowsiness that could impair driving. But again, I'm thinking this is not really something you should do while driving. There's a lot of controversy about this because there's 20 drugs on the market to treat male sexual dysfunction. There's not a single drug for women. Some claim that the FDA has different standards for women or men and are reluctant to approve a drug for women. Groups like the National Organization for Women have expressed concern that there is a cultural attitude that men's sexual health is extremely important, but women's sexual health is not so important, and that attitude is in play at the FDA. Whether there really is bias at the FDA is an open question. But the issue of women's sexual dysfunction is hugely important. I personally know a lot of women who have struggled through this, and it has caused enormous problems to their self-esteem and their quality of life. Viagra has been a huge boost for millions of men, and women really need something that will help them as well. An article in Nature this month points out that the idea of two sexes is really too simplistic for the reality. Typically, we define gender by the absence of a Y chromosome. If you don't have it, you're female. With it, you're male. But it isn't really that simple in reality, because there are people who have the Y chromosome, yet they have the gonads of a female. These intersex children create great problems for the parents in having to decide whether they should raise the child as a boy or a girl, because they are not specifically one or the other. Then we have to look at it on the genetic level. Now we know, when we're talking about genetics, the difference between the different races is virtually meaningless. It's external. There might be slight differences in external morphology, but other than that, we're all pretty much the same. And surprisingly, on the genetic level, the same is true for men and women, because the boundary between the two sexes is kind of blurry. There's actually more difference within male or within female than there is between male and female. And there's cases where there's so much overlap, you can't really easily define someone as male or female. And we all start out the same. At about 5 weeks, we are neither male or female, but we have the potential to be either. Now, we used to think that female was just the default position unless a Y chromosome came along, but now we better understand that there are also processes that trigger female development and femaleness. It's not completely passive the way we used to think. Sex determination is a much more complicated process than we used to think it was. A battle has been raging with transgendered people and what bathroom they should use, and clearly that's a problem. People should be able to use the bathroom. That's kind of important. The problem is very complicated. How do we define the gender of someone? Should it be assigned by their anatomy? Should it be assigned by hormones or cells or chromosomes? And how do we deal with this when those things clash? It's not a simple binary decision as to whether someone's male or female. The best solution seems to be to find out what the individual person thinks. If they feel like they're female, they probably are. And vice versa. That's probably the surest test and the surest way to get to a meaningful answer.